Hello and welcome to Hampton Radio, and today we have Ed Ratcliffe with us. Hello.
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 Nice to be here.
Yeah, fantastic. So, Saf, do you want to just tell us all a little bit about what it is that you do?
So, I left Hampton in 2012 and I've sort of gone on to pursue a career in the film industry. I sort of worked on sort of everything from high-end feature films, so such as Bond, Star Wars, Transformers, that kind of thing. And also do things like sort of high-end commercials for sort of any brand that you can probably list. I've probably done an advert for them, and sort of music videos and TV. And then also, I've also set up an engineering business on the side to sort of support this industry. And so yeah, that's that.
Fantastic. And what kind of stuff is it that you do on these feature films and music videos and commercials?
So I work as a camera technician. So my official role is a second assistant camera or clapper loader. So what I have is I have an 18-ton truck full of camera equipment. I usually look after one camera. I'm sort of assigned to a camera. So on sort of big films, you may have up to 18 cameras. So there'll be 18 of me on there. And we sort of generally have to keep that camera prepped and ready to go whenever it's needed. We load the camera with film. Believe it or not, film is still used. And we sort of log all the sort of the rushes and make sure everything's working. And generally, I just sort of always poised and ready to be going wherever we need to go.
Oh, fantastic. And what made you think that this is what I want to go on and do?
So it's something that I've always been interested in. And I even, so when I was at Hampton, I started in the film club and all this kind of thing. And I just kind of, you know, fell into it is the wrong word, but you almost sort of set yourself on this trajectory and sort of, you know, things happen and you look back 6 years later and you've been doing it for quite a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So when you left Hampton, how did you go about going down that path?
So it actually started probably around my time of my GCSEs. I met a film director who does a lot of commercials, and he kind of really took me under his wing and sort of mentored me. He taught me how to pitch on jobs and all this kind of thing. And what he also did is he was in a very unique position where he also owned his own production company. So what that meant is that he was able to bring me on to sort of any jobs he was doing. And so I kind of had this interest in camera, in the camera department. So the way you kind of go into the camera department is as a camera trainee, and you effectively think of that as a runner for the camera department. So you're kind of a sort of general dog's body for them. And this is quite a unique way of doing it. So what it meant is that whilst I was still at school, I was effectively working. So I would, on weekends or on the occasional day where I might not turn up, I would go and do jobs. What this meant was that I actually had a network of people who I could sort of use and utilise for work as I left school. And that's really the main thing how it started. There was also a school friend's mum was an executive producer on things like Downton Abbey and some other, and Whitechapel, and I sort of got some work experience in there. And it's just really sort of created a network of contacts that I could utilise as soon as I left school and was able to work full time, really.
So what would you say are the most fulfilling parts of working in film, and what are the biggest challenges?
The biggest challenges are, it's very long working hours, and it's you have to be very, very calm and level-headed under pressure. So if things aren't going as well as they should be, or sort of not running on time, I may be sort of asked to do stuff that could really affect the outcome of the day. And you just have to be, you know, you might have a load of really sort of not very happy Americans standing over you screaming and shouting, asking you why this thing hasn't happening, and you've just got to realise that actually what you're doing isn't very important, and if it takes five minutes longer than it needs to be, everything will be okay. And that's how you kind of learn to sort of just be calm and not panic under pressure. In terms of the most fulfilling side, is the really amazing thing is that how much gets done in a day. It's, if you're on a big movie set, it's almost like an army of people, and we will come in, everything gets set up, and just stuff that's done. And no one, you know, you don't have sort of meetings and stuff. No one sort of sits around deciding what's going to happen. You get there, stuff gets done, stuff gets shot, you blow some stuff up, crash some cars, all this kind of thing, and then you go home at the end of the day and you're like, oh, yeah, that was quite cool, that. Good fun.
So, you mentioned you had a role on a lot of blockbuster films.
Mm-hmm.
How is that very different to the smaller projects? So, like, you mentioned, obviously, like, there's more people and everything's happened on a grander scale, but is there any more differences that...
A larger film, there's a lot more pressure, and you kind of feel that you're a very small cog in that sort of machine. And so whereas on a small project where you might know some people, so you might the director might be a friend of yours, or the cameraman might be someone you know, so you can go up to them, have a chat with them, and go, oh, so what are you doing here? Like, you can't do that on a big budget feature film, because you'll probably get you'll have someone who's got the whole pressure of a movie studio like 20th Century Fox on them, and they'll just absolutely lose it. And so what you have to do is you have to really learn to sort of almost be like a on the sort of larger films. I try to be almost like a butler. So you're never your presence isn't noticed unless you're needed, and so you just sort of quickly nip in and do your bit and get out and just let everything happen.
Do you have a preference as to whether you prefer the larger or the smaller projects?
So, another thing about these larger projects is they're very consuming. So if you're on the project full time, you will be working 6 days a week, doing probably 14-hour days plus your travel. So you don't really have much of a life. So what I tend to do now is commercials, and also going as a day player on these kind of films when there's sort of large action sequences and more cameras come out. And what this allows me to do is it allows me to have a life effectively around this sort of world. And in commercials, it's a big crew of people who will work together, so we kind of know. It's a lot friendlier. So I really do prefer the whole sort of commercials world. Really.
So how does the process work in sort of crew getting hired to do a film? Because cast, they have auditions and things, but how do crew get into a film?
So what would happen is let's take for instance a commercial. About 2 weeks ago I did a big commercial for Nike. So the way that works is Nike will have a partnership with an advertising agency, and that advertising agency will come up with will come up with a script for this new product. So this was a new trainer, and that advertising agency will then pitch that job out to will put it out for tender to lots of directors. And so there's a lot of guidelines that govern how many people can be pitching on a project at one time. So the usual sort of rule is that 5 directors can pitch on these jobs, and those directors are all represented by production companies. So let's say that director wins the job. He will then bring on all the relevant heads of departments. He'll bring on a cameraman, otherwise known as a director of photography. He'll bring on a production designer, and sort of all these, they're sort of the really key people, and the production designer is there to sort of really kind of create the scene. So if we're going to create this room, for example, they're going to be looking at the kind of mood they wanted, and they choose sort of furniture and things and all this kind of stuff, and they would interface with a costume designer who would create sort of clothing that would fit the script. And then what would happen is those heads of department would hire their relevant team. So the cameraman will have assistants who will assist him, and he'll usually have his regulars. So the cameraman will hire someone called a focus puller, and so it's their job to keep the image in focus. We don't have autofocus, so what someone has to do is has to judge the distance of how far something is away and keep that person or object in focus. So you can imagine, as soon as things start moving, it starts going very complicated, and that focus puller will then hire the rest of the camera team. So second assistant camera, so that's me. I'll get brought into the project, and if it's a really big job, we might have a trainee to help us out. So I'll then help to bring that in, and that's how it works, really. It's a real hierarchical way of doing it, and a real sort of chain of command.
You mentioned earlier you set up a company on the side to sort of help you along with that. Do you want to tell us a bit about that and what you do?
Yeah, so So when I was at Hampton, I was really into my design technology, and because I was shooting a lot of films and stuff, I wanted to be able to sort of move the camera more, and I sort of did some research. And one of the ways you do this is with something called a jib or a camera crane. And you might see these on, if you watch the football, you might see them behind the goal at the football. Which effectively, what it is, it's a long arm with a camera on the end that keeps it level and allows you to sort of smoothly move the camera about. So I found that buying one of these was too expensive. So I was doing design technology, and I spoke to my tutor about it, and I kind of decided that it wouldn't be that complicated to make. So I built one, and it worked quite well. Used it on a couple of jobs of my own that I was shooting. And this kind of really taught me a lot about taught me sort of the fundamentals of sort of engineering and machining and how to design things. And so what I found happened is, as I left school and was starting to work, I realised that our cameras aren't just one thing. It's lots of different bits that are joined together, and you're constantly having to rebuild things and put things in different places and attach things, and people needed all these brackets to attach them together. And I sort of thought, well, these brackets that are out there, not that great, they don't look very good, and sort of you can't really get them anywhere. So what I did is I had a little chat with my dad, and I convinced him to give me some space in the garage, and bought a lathe, and that was good, and made lots of bits with that. And so then I sort of needed some more bits of kit, so I bought a milling machine and sort of slowly started taking over the garage, really. And next thing I knew is that I had all these people. Not only was I coming up to making these little, essentially I was making these little turned parts where you mount lens motors on them, and soon people were coming up to me and asking me to make things for them. So it was like to bespoke work. So they'd say, look, Ed, I've got this thing and I need to attach it to this thing, and I can't do it. So I'd go, okay, well, let's have a go. And next thing I knew, I'd basically paid for my machines, and I had quite a lot of orders, and I needed to speed things along a bit. So I bought something called a CNC machine. So a CNC machine is effectively a robot, and what you do is you create a 3D model on a computer program of what you want to make, and then you program using that computer program the machine. And then what you do is you then take a USB stick that's got the code on it, plug it into your machine, load it up with material, and off you go. So this is when this machine really allowed me to make lots of new and complicated products, and as a result I was able to make more money out of it. And that's really where the business just really took off from there. And I now specialise in doing very sort of a lot of bespoke, fast turnaround products for people. So what I should also say is the advantage I have is, because I have a knowledge of the cameras, people don't have to come to me with a fully dimensioned and tolerance drawing for what you would normally do if you went to an engineering business. They can essentially come to me on a Friday with either something that's broken or something that needs to be attached to each other. They can leave those parts with me, and on a Monday morning they can have a fully working product, which is kind of unheard of, really. So there you go.
So how long have you been doing that?
So that started in 2015. End of 2016. End of 2015, and I now have a very wide consumer base, and I ship all around the world.
Oh wow, fantastic! So what kind of stuff have you made recently?
Won't have very much context here, but I've made a special handheld rig for someone who's a Steadicam operator. This Steadicam operator had a single axis gimbal that would live on the top of their Steadicam, and he wanted to be able to use it in a more handheld manner. So I created a cage system, designed it all from scratch and built it for him. That went down well. I've made a lot of sort of little smaller brackets for people, and it's very busy.
Fantastic.
Very,
yeah.
Very busy.
So where can you see that going in the future?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of just letting it happen at the moment. What I would like to do is I'd like to grow the business, and I'm looking at growing the business into creating high-end bespoke homewares as well, things like sort of lamps and all that kind of thing. I'm sort of expanding my equipment, so I'm getting bigger, faster CNC machines so that I can make more stuff quickly and make bigger things. And I'm just going to see where it goes.
See where the wind takes you.
Yeah.
Moving on a bit, how might someone wanting to go into the film industry best approach that? Because of course there are many, many ways, but which ways do you think are good, like any relevant skills you might need, any paths you might want to take?
So it's very difficult to get in, and you really have to sort of, so that initial getting your leg in the door is really difficult. So the common way in is to be a runner. And the way you sort of come in to be a runner is you normally sort of go around sort of production companies. So there's lots of production companies in London, and you would go around there and you'd sort of essentially just hassle people. And eventually you will get some kind of break. And what you do is you then work your way up from the bottom. So it can be a very slow process. But the main thing to do is to really sort of utilise your network. So anyone you know, so it might be, you know, your friend's dad does something that's vaguely related. So you go and talk to him and you say, look, this is what I want to do. Is there any chance you could give me a contact that I can come in? I just work for free, just do whatever. And eventually, you know, out of your 100 doors you knock on, one of them will open and you will get in. It's very difficult. You have to be very persistent. But you know, if you try hard enough, you will make it.
Society and a lot of people at the moment are pushing ever further towards STEM subjects, maths, science, which is fantastic and everything, but it obviously can leave the things that are more creative in a bit of a limbo as to what's going to happen. So, like, do you think there's some way that they could be fused? Because obviously, with your engineering and the creativity, you've found, like, a nice, healthy middle.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think there's room, like enough room for creative and the art stuff today, or do you think they can almost sort of coexist in one? It's a big question.
I found when I was sort of going through the process of my A-levels, I mean, I when I was doing my A-levels and when I left Hampton, I fully intended to go to university. I later sort of deferred that and ended up working. But what I found is that, and I know what I felt was that people were really being pushed to kind of get involved in these hard subjects. And I feel that as great as these hard subjects are, you don't end up with any sort of real world experience. You know, if I wanted to be an engineer, I could have gone and done, sort of mechanics and what's that kind of math? What's that math? Is it, what math do you do? Is it mechanics? Yeah. So you know, so what I could have done is I could have gone and studied my maths in addition to my design technology, but at that point it's not what I wanted to do. And also I'm dyslexic, and having someone tell me how to work out the torque value of a beam that's 1 meter long acting on a pivot when there's no real world use for it, it's not the slightest bit interesting. However, if someone says to you and says, I'm going to give you this amount of money to build this thing, and it involves this mechanism, you suddenly go, oh, okay, right, well, maybe it's time to learn how to do this. And that is really what drives it. And what I've always found is that I'm hopeless at, you know, if you drew a load of maths equations on there or some trigonometry or whatever, I couldn't do it. But if it's applicable to what I need to do, if I've got to, you know, machine something, or I've got to, you know, I need to sort of work out a diameter of something and I can't just put some calipers on it or whatever, I will figure out a way to do it. And I think it's really key to learn skills that are applicable to what you're doing.
So very much a kind of not leaning entirely towards the super academic or the super practical, but trying to lay your practical skills on a base of theory.
I think it's really sort of grounding that sort of theory in, well, grounding that theory in a real world situation.
Hi, because you just talked on learning, trying to learn skills that are applicable to you and what you want to do. But when you're younger, maybe in your A level years, or I'm not sure when you fully decided what you really want to pursue. But in the time where you didn't quite know what you wanted to pursue, how did you choose what you wanted to focus on and what you wanted to do?
Essentially, what I did is when I was at Hampton, I was kind of set on this tangent of going to film school. And so what I did is I made sure I had a set of skills and that were applicable, but also stuff that I was interested in. Because if you're not interested in it, it's a total waste of time. And I think the key thing is to make a decision. So you could be sat there and you don't know what you want to do, and you kind of get into this sort of almost blind panic of you don't know what to study, you haven't got a clue. And I think the best thing you can do is pick something. It doesn't matter if you end up not doing it, because otherwise you'll sit around for ages and you won't get anything done. And so you know, let's say you're umming and ahhing about what you want to do. Well, pick something, you know, pick something that you're interested in, pick a passion. And then what will happen is, because you're passionate about it, you'll kind of end up really sort of, it's an interesting thing to describe. You almost end up learning more about it than you actually realise you know. And if you really pick that passion of what you're interested in, and you end up sort of trying to pursue work in it, your work won't really feel like work. You know, I go to work every day and I basically hang out with my mates. Yes, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and someone come home at 2 o'clock in the morning, but it's really enjoyable. And I think sometimes, you know, you don't have to, your learning doesn't stop when you're at school. You know, if you spend 2 years doing something and you realise that actually this isn't what I want to do, you can go and study. You know, you might not even have to study, you might be able to learn on the job. So I think the key thing is to really just pick something and set yourself on a trajectory, because you can always change your mind later.
So how do you think your career will progress as you get older? Do you think you might focus more on your business, or will you try and get up the ladder in the film industry?
So what my goal is I want to be something called a director of photography. And a director of photography creates the image maker. So what will happen is you will come up with a scene of, so let's say you're creating a scene of someone eating in a restaurant. So what I would do is, if I was approaching that script, is I would say, right, you know, what's sort of the mood, what's the feeling in this area, and you make decisions on sort of the lighting, and you then also would talk to people like the costume designers and the production designers about sort of colours and creating a real feel for the image. And so the way you get there is you essentially work your way up. So the camera department has this sort of hierarchy where you start at the bottom as a camera trainee. Then what you do is you then progress to being a second assistant camera, which is what I do now. You then, once you've done that for a bit, you then progress to being a focus puller or first assistant camera. Then you would start camera operating, and then you would be a director of photography. And essentially, you just keep working. And as you get better and better, you'll have opportunities to step up and do things. And also, you're surrounded by this pool of creative people. So you might be talking to someone and saying, like, hey, look, I've got this short film I'm shooting the weekend. Do you want to come light it? Do you want to be the director of photography in it? And you go, yeah, great. And so you go out. And so suddenly what you're doing is you're building this body of work. And suddenly what will happen is let's say you're assisting and you're shooting as well. And so suddenly what happens is you'll start shooting more, and suddenly you'll start getting paid for this shooting work. And funny enough, you get paid quite a lot more working as a director of photography than you do as an assistant. And so this sort of takeover will happen, and next thing you know, you're just off shooting, and it just happens. And so that's what I want to do. In terms of my business, I still very much feel like it's a sideline. The film side is a priority. So for instance, if I had something to make and someone offered me a job on a film set, I would take the job on the film set over making something. I'd defer it. I'd do it the weekend. Do it overnight. But it's grown quite well. I never intended it to grow to where it has done. I now turn over nearly as much money as I make, do my assisting work, and I ship to all around the world. So it could get quite big. But it's a nice problem to have, and I'll just see what happens.
Do you think that film school is useful, or would you recommend going straight in and working off the bat?
I would suggest a hybrid approach of going and working in the industry for a few years to actually decide and reassure yourself if that is what you want to do before you come out of film school. By working in the industry, as a runner or a camera trainee for a, or you know, doing what I do for a couple of years, you'll gain a grounding and an understanding of how the whole thing works. So what that means is that you know how everyone else's job works. So not only does that mean that you can better interface with people on set, but people will know that, and so people will usually tend to work harder for you because they can't pull the wool over your eyes. So something that I, a plan that I sort of had originally was to work in the industry for a bit. This all started when I deferred my university placement. I deferred my university placement for a year to see how it would go. And then next thing I knew, about a year later, I was on a job and got this strange phone call from someone at Bournemouth University that I didn't really understand what was going on. And they asked me if I wanted to still go to uni. And I said, no thanks, and put the phone down. and what I carried on doing was like, well, what I'll do is I'll keep doing this for a bit, and then what I'll do is I'll go to film school and I'll learn to be a cameraman, and then I'll come out of film school and I'll go shooting. And 6 years later, that hasn't happened because I've sort of diverted a bit from my course. But what it shows is that you know, it goes back to my thing of like, you don't have to make that decision there and then. And what I really would advise you to do is to definitely not go straight into a film school and really gain that grounding on a proper set where you're not students messing about, it's real people doing real stuff with other people's money, and things matter, and you'll really learn how to get stuff done.
Well, just as a kind of a final wrapping up note then, if you came to someone who liked creativity and liked that kind of stuff but was feeling more pressured to go for something more academic, do you have any words of advice you might give to them?
Do what you want to do.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well,
you are in control of your own destiny.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you
very much. Thank you very much for listening. And yes, that's all. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.